Baseball season is heating up. Odyssey has you covered with the most entertaining coverage of your team. Stay locked in and in the know with the local voices you trust as they bring you unfiltered takes, recap games, react to the latest team news, and talk to callers. Listen to your favorite shows for free on the Odyssey app, odyssey.com, your smart speaker, or in the car with Android Auto or Apple CarPlay.
Laura, I went to the movie theater last night to listen to a record.
I saw that. Tell me about that.
It was so interesting. Pearl Jam had a one-night-only sort of listening party at a couple hundred theaters all around the U.S. and around the world.
So nothing visual. This is all just listening to a new record?
Right. Okay. My friend, well, there was something visual.
Okay.
Here's a little sample of one of the songs. From the soon-to-be-released album, Dark Matter. Now, imagine sitting in the Dolby, like the Dolby Atmos Theater at the Southdale AMC. I'm sitting next to my friend Kathan, and Kathan is a Pearl Jam obsessive.
Mm.
He travels around the country, kind of like Adam and Fish.
Yes.
He travels to see Pearl Jam.
Love that.
And he had two tickets last night to see this release. And neither of us had really ever been to anything like that.
Fun.
So the way it worked was, first it's like just going to a movie, right? So you got all the pre-show, and then you're watching the previews. And then the movie starts. And I was like, well, are we going to see them
was it a
play?
Video?
Or, no, it was nothing.
Oh.
So I don't know. And this is like, I'm sure like real Pearl Jam fans will be like, DeRusha, you are such an idiot. But like one of the guys in the band, it was not Eddie Vedder.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guys comes on stage. I think it was Mike McCready comes on camera.
Okay.
And it's like, hey, thanks for being here. And it was sort of a grainy-looking, crappy, look worse than a cell phone video.
Was this live? So he was coming into all of these theaters?
I think it was taped. Because they played it at night at all these different locations, so it wasn't live. And it was like, thanks for coming. We're going to play the album twice. First, you'll see it in darkness.
Cool.
So they're like, close your eyes.
Yeah.
Really listen to the lyrics.
I like that.
And then, so they run through the track list, and then and it is totally dark. It's totally dark in the theater.
Yeah.
And then they play it again with like this sort of psychedelic like animation.
Yeah.
It looked like a Windows screensaver.
Sure.
Didn't really look like
stuff bouncing and
stuff bouncing
on the screen. Yes,
but it also had the lyrics.
Oh, that's cool.
So you know, if you watch a music video, sometimes there's a lyric only video.
Yep,
it was cool,
I bet.
Was such a different experience to see the lyrics up there because you're really focusing on the lyrics. Whereas the first time through, you're sort of just absorbing the music. It was in a time where we stream, where we listen to 30 seconds on TikTok, where if we don't like a song, we hit next.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool to sit down for 80 minutes and listen from start to finish.
I love that.
Twice.
I love that. And did this record tell somewhat of a story? Like, was it a cohesive?
Not like the way that Beyonce's.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Not like that.
Okay.
It's a little darker than a lot of what you think of with Pearl Jam.
Right.
And as usual, like, even that song that Dan just played for us.
That was a little peppy for Eddie Vedder, I thought.
A little bit.
Major key-ish.
But it's built. These songs are built to be performed live. You're like, oh, man, to hear the guitars and the. What a unique experience. It just made me think, like, there are how many, you know, there are different ways that artists do, like, a listening party.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, I've seen some broadcasts where, like, you'll have an artist sitting on a stage, like a First Avenue type stage.
Right.
And sort of narrating or telling the story.
Yeah.
But and I think there are only so many that could get away with this, right?
Yeah.
You're like, who would you see that you'd be like, oh, it'd be interesting to watch?
I would see just about anybody do that. I think that's really cool.
It was cool.
And it is something, too, at the more local level for musicians. My guitar teacher and local musician, Al Church, who's just a fabulous artist here in town, he and some friends put together kind of an impromptu Christmas record this past December. Just on a whim, they went and recorded a bunch of wonderful Christmas songs just in their own style. Mixing up and improvising and everything. And then they, on Christmas Day, kind of in the late afternoon, once most people were done with all their stuff with their families, they did this live listening party where they played it on, what was it? I think it was on Instagram.
They played
the whole recording session, and then everybody got to participate and, you know, give your comments and give your likes and everything. And it was just this cool community, knowing that everybody who likes them and who was invited to listen to this, we were all listening together. It was fun. It was really great. I loved it.
It's interesting how artists are trying to figure out different ways to kind of capture our attention and also to reward like real fans, right?
Yep.
So this for sure, the theater was pretty full.
I'm glad to hear
that. It
was
8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
On a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And he was going to go with his wife and she couldn't go.
Sure.
So he was like, do you want to go? Like,
I'm glad you did it.
Why not? Like,
yes.
It was cool. I mean, you look at Pearl Jam, you're like 33 years
of
making music. This is their 12th album.
It's fabulous. Great.
So pretty fun. Like still, you know, Eddie Vedder still sounds like Eddie Vedder. That
love him.
That style, that kind of lyrical voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so... I think of him as a great guitarist.
Yeah.
But certainly his vocals, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unmistakable when you hear him. You know exactly who it is.
Exactly.
For sure.
Caitlin Clark talking with her new team, you know, number one draft pick.
Yep.
Indiana Fever. She talked about who she was a fan of growing up. Did you hear this?
Yeah.
I grew up loving the Minnesota Lynx. I probably shouldn't say that anymore. And Tamika Catchings, of course. So
good say. Good say.
I love how she was sheepish about that. You know, you can tell she was like putting her head down in Minnesota Lynx. Yeah.
But you think about that time. I mean,
yes.
The Lynx were a dynasty at that point. So I think that's pretty fun.
That was fun.
I just wanted to share that. Another story I saw today, answering a question that I didn't know anyone was asking. Can you have a happy marriage without sex? This is the New York Times, which, by the way, when you're looking for love advice, I go to the
New York Times. All the news that's fit to print.
They have this modern love issue.
Yeah.
Have you seen this is all in the New York Times magazine. A lot of it is going on the New York Times website this week. And some of this stuff, I don't know. I don't know, Laura. Like, I don't want to be like such an old fuddy-duddy. But one of the articles is Lesson from a 20-Person Polycule.
I saw that. I need to read that. That is... I don't even know what to say about this yet. I need to read it with an open mind.
I know. I haven't read it either.
But at the same time, it's very outside my comfort zone.
20 people in this group. And so it's like they're people in their mid-20s to mid-40s. And they're all like sort of...
Orgying.
Sort of. Like not necessarily. It's not like all at once, but they're all like kind of... You're over here and
sharing
also over
and
there.
And
share, yeah.
Yes. And some of them are married. And
sometimes I wonder, I'm like, there's so much ink sort of spilled on. And look, like, you navigate the world the way you need to navigate the world. But like, part of news is stuff that's different and weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if it elevates this stuff that is like, this is not. Normal.
No, it's not mainstream. It's not.
And
normal.
Who wants to read an article about my boring marriage, right? Like, or your marriage? Like, it's not that interesting.
We had meatloaf last night.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I know. I wonder sometimes. I'm not going to accuse the New York Times or any media outlet of sensationalizing or trying to be shocking just to get readers or clicks or whatever. But some of this stuff, you kind of wonder. And then, you know, at the same time, they do need to reach a younger demographic. So if 20-somethings are presenting themselves as these just open sex, love, rock and roll, like the new form of hippiness, and this is part of that. Is it newsworthy? No. But is it a feature story for the New York Times Magazine? Well,
yes. It's interesting. Yes. But I also wonder, like, just the way that we consume news is flat, right?
Yeah.
Like, it shows up on your Facebook feed or your X or your Instagram, and it all shows up the same.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a feature story or you have an investigative story, it's in the same little box on the same little thing.
Right.
And so it doesn't feel like, oh, well, this is just the magazine. It's like, why is the New York Times doing a story about some weirdo, you know?
It's jarring.
It is a little jarring. Mm-hmm. And what I struggle with is exactly what you're saying. Is this just like, oh, it's interesting. Like, here is the one example of this polycule in the, you know, maybe there are three of these in the U.S. Let's be real. Like, how often is this happening? Now, I think there's all sorts of weird stuff that goes on in people's love lives that nobody ever talks about.
Yeah.
But, like, is this that? I doubt it.
I doubt it, too. And I wouldn't even put this in the category of anybody's love life. I think this is an attempt to be, you know, provocative and out there and pushing boundaries and just, you know, lots of experimentation, which, fine, that's not for me to judge.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't, I can't call it love. I can't put it in the category of love. I don't, I just, that doesn't work for me.
The other article, this question about whether a sexless marriage can be a happy one, I do think it's probably more relatable to a wider group of people.
Yep, yep.
Because, you know, life changes. Life changes.
You
people
bet
have
it does.
Different needs and you're at different spaces. And
yep.
Can it be happy? Well, if you're both on the same page, it can be.
There are,
I think,
so many more factors that go into happiness in a marriage, I would think, than just sex.
But you have to be lucky enough to be in the same spot on this thing.
Yeah, but you probably grow to be in the same spot if you're going through something together and and have to deal with the same thing, you know?
It seems to me that trouble develops when someone is uninterested and someone else is like, what?
Sure.
I still am.
Right.
Now what? The good news is you have that kind of group of 20 you can go join.
I think, Jason, that Dr. Phil should feel pretty threatened by you right now.
Well,
I really do. I could see it.
It's, I think it's really interesting, that idea. And the luck, the flip side of this is if you are in a happy marriage where everything is good to go on, you know, the physical needs, the emotional needs, like, first of all, congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
It's a testament to, like, being willing to work at it and also, like, a lot of luck. Like, sometimes it's a lot of luck. I'm thankful every day. I'm like, there's a lot of luck here. And putting up with me for 20-plus years is... I mean, the luck of finding that person in college. Maybe it's I grabbed her when she was young enough. She doesn't know better.
No. She loves you. You guys have a beautiful bond that you've tended to for decades.
You have to keep the garden watered.
Yes, you do.
But you also, like, have to know that things do change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For sure.
You're lucky, too.
I am lucky. Fortunate. Yeah. Happy.
That's probably a better term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks, Laura. I hope, you know, you don't have a sexless marriage unless you so desire that.
Are you still talking to me?
I'm just telling the audience that. Yeah, Dear Rush Hour news headlines coming up next. Want you to stick around, too, if you're a Naz Reid fan. Oh, my gosh. I was in tears reading Chris Hines' wonderful story about Naz Reid and his mentor, his father figure. Just amazing. If you love Naz, you're going to love that. Well, if you love love in family, you're going to love this story. Chris will join us at 5:35. D Rush Hour news headline coming up, though, next, including Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential with a couple Minnesota people on it. A charity website based off the success of that viral red paperclip bit. And a Minnesota Vikings player going to help single parents get access to college. D Rush Hour next. D-Rush Hour News headlines time here on the 17th of April, and a local CEO has been named a Times 100 Most Influential People. Yes, she is. Beth Ford from Land O'Lakes makes the list. Land O'Lakes reaching out to tell us about this today. There also was a University of Minnesota professor on the list of 100 Most Influential. In time, they talked about Beth Ford's, one of her first jobs, detasseling corn in Iowa for $2 an hour. And she has been working really to change some national policy, getting more investments in rural community, getting better broadband coverage, helping farmers adapt to the changing climate, stronger trade efforts. Pretty interesting stuff. This is the quote from Time. The farm-to-table movement has been happening at restaurants since the 1970s, but thanks to Beth, the farm-to-boardroom table movement is just beginning. What do you think of this idea? When I first read about this in the Star Tribune, I got to be honest, it seems a little complicated to me. But it's a charity website based off the success of that guy who started with a paperclip and ended up with a house. I don't know that if you have a paperclip, you should trade it away. That's Kyle MacDonald in his TED Talk. If you have a paperclip, like, just use it to hold some paper together. So anyway, the Star Tribune reporting on this former IT executive at United Health, his name is Joel Ackerman, who's about to launch an online platform called Red Ladder. So you know how popular it is on Facebook or whatever, these buy nothing groups where people are like just trying to get rid of stuff and somebody who needs it takes it. So he's like, well, this is cool. People are interested in that. What if we could figure out a way to do it and benefit charity? So the idea is like Dan Cook would donate. He's like, oh, I don't need these headphones. He would donate that. And then another person could get it. I'm like, oh, I want those headphones. I'm going to trade in my iPhone. And then somebody else wants the iPhone. They can trade in a, I don't know, pack of cigarettes in Minneapolis. And then you could just keep going higher and higher. And then the ladder, the red ladder, ends with the website selling an item and donating the cash to the charity that Dan designated as the initial donor. Another option is just like donate money to charity. Wouldn't that be a lot easier? This just seems so complicated to me. There are a lot of new ideas when it comes to getting people excited about giving money. You know, that All True, maybe you've seen that. We should get like some of these guys on. Former Wild player Jason Zucker, Vikings player Kyle Rudolph, a couple of Minnesota entrepreneurs have this website where you donate to a charity and you get X entries into sweepstakes. And you win like VIP access to a concert or meeting a pro. Pretty cool stuff. So there you go. Minnesota Vikings player is going to help some single parents get access to college. Yeah, Anthony Barr, who spent so many years with the Minnesota Vikings. I think he's a free agent right now, Anthony Barr is. We'll see if he ends up back. But his foundation is just amazing. It's called Raise the Bar. And the Minneapolis St. Paul Business Journal writing about how he is partnering with Dunwoody College of Technology, this new scholarship for single parents who would get money for housing, childcare, and career coaching, all getting more women involved in technical careers. That's the D-Rush Hour News headlines at 5:32. We'll break and come back with Chris Hine with a fascinating look inside the life, the motivation of Naz Reid.
We all know baseball is a long season. I'm Brett Boone from the Brett Boone Podcast. This summer, take a trip down memory lane with me and hear from the legends of the game. So far this year, I've had conversations with Randy Johnson, Pete Rose, Deion Sanders. Plus, every week we look at the state of Major League Baseball, which teams are exceeding expectations, which ones are struggling to meet them. Follow and listen to the Brett Boone Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Two words have captivated Timberwolves fans this season. I mean, they even had a beach towel night. Naz Reid. The fans love Naz Reid. We all do. This has been the most electric Timberwolves season, certainly in my 21 years here in the Twin Cities. You could make a case this has been the most electric season in Timberwolves history. Naz Reid, a big part of it. But a side of Naz that I never knew about until I read Chris Hines' story at StarTribune.com today. It is an incredible glimpse into what it took and what kind of human Naz Reid is to get to where he got. And if you don't have a little bit of a tear in your eye by the end of it, I don't know what's wrong with you. Chris is with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. And what a moving and insightful story today, Chris. Really terrific.
Appreciate it. That means a lot. You know, it was a very fun and emotional process doing this story, for sure. And I'm glad that in the short time it's been online, it's gotten the reaction it has. It's been great to see.
Naz had a mentor who was not his biological father, but in every other metric, certainly felt like a father based on the story that you shared. And I didn't really know that much about this, and certainly not the depth of it until this story. Why don't you start at the beginning, sort of where your interest and your ability to tell this story, how this kind of came down?
Yeah, you know, just given how popular Naz has been to the fan base, given the fact that he's always gotten better throughout his career, you know, I always wanted to do a deeper dive into Naz and who he is as a person and, you know, where he came from. And so I spent, you know, some time in New Jersey during the middle of the season after one of their games in New York, just trying to meet up with as many people in his life as I could. I always knew ever since kind of 2 years ago when his mentor, Rudy Roundtree, passed away that, you know, this was something that happened in his life. I just didn't know kind of how open he might be to discussing it. And, you know, I'm grateful that he and Sheila, Rudy's wife, basically kind of opened up and shared this story with me throughout the process of doing this story on Naz. And, you know, I did a lot of reporting for it that, you know, a lot of some of the stuff that I really enjoyed also got left on the cutting room floor, which is just kind of the process of writing these things. But, you know, I'm grateful that they were able to share their story and felt comfortable enough to do so. And it seems to be resonating with people, which has been great to see.
So why don't you give our listeners like a little bit of a sketch of sort of this history, because these guys, it's about a 10-year old relationship when the Roundtrees, and that goes back to New Jersey when they became like a second family, right?
Yeah, so Naz attended Roselle Catholic High School, which is about an hour or so north of where he grew up in Asbury Park, New Jersey. So, you know, his mom had two daughters, and Naz is going to school an hour north. His high school basketball coach lived in Asbury Park, so he was kind of able to take him there, but wasn't always able to take him home at night. So Naz was trying to catch the train back to Asbury Park, and it was kind of difficult with all the basketball demands that he had to get the train back. So Naz becomes friends with a teammate of his, Peace, who's the Roundtree son. So he's just spending a lot of time at the Roundtree house his freshman year. And so it just kind of became, you know, one of those things where it was just kind of convenient in a way. Like, Naz is always here. The Roundtrees can take him from their home in Newark, New Jersey, can take him to and from, you know, practice to school every day. And so Naz just felt super comfortable. You know, his mother felt comfortable with the Roundtrees, and so it just kind of became a thing where Naz was at their house a lot.
Yeah.
And because they were able to take him to and from practices, to and from games, AAU tournaments, all that stuff. So, you know, the geography of northern and central New Jersey, I think, plays as big a part in this as anything else. Because without kind of the logistical challenges of getting to and from where Naz went to high school, I don't think this relationship ends up happening the way it does.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that point is so spot on. You think like what might have happened with Naz Reid if he hadn't met this man, if he hadn't met Rudy and developed this relationship, and that all of the things to line up for Nas's mom to be like, look, I hate to let my own kid move into somebody else's house, but I just can't do it. I can't do it all. I have to. Pretty amazing, like amazing generosity all the way around, right?
Yeah, that's you know, a part of the story. Nas has a quote in there from his mother, and it was just all, you know, just all kind of worked out in a way that Rudy was already kind of around the basketball program. You know, as Nas's high school coach said, you know, he was always kind of the guy bringing extra Gatorades to practice, making sure everybody had a ride, you know, that kind of familiarity with the program. And it just, you know, and Nas, you know, some of the stuff that got cut from the story, even from a young age at Asbury Park, Nas always kind of gravitated towards having, you know, kind of whether it was teachers or people in his life that he kind of looked up to as mentors. So this was kind of nothing new for Nas, you know, kind of seeking these sort of kind of mentor kind of relationships with people that were significant influences in his life.
This is Chris Hine. His story is at StarTribune.com right now about Nas Reed. And I put it out on my Twitter account. If you're not you should be subscribing, people. But if you're not, I put a gift link out at Darusha J so you can read the story. So Nas goes to LSU. And, I mean, it's amazing. Rudy moves with him to LSU, right? And then he gets drafted here. And Rudy and Sheila move here.
Yep, that to me, the LSU part of this, to me, was the most eye-opening part of the story because I heard that as I was talking to people. And the way it was described to me was, it was like when Nas chose to go to LSU, he goes to Rudy and is like, basically doesn't even give him a choice. He just says, you're moving to LSU with me, right? Like, you're coming down with me, like not really even asking him. It's like, you're coming down to LSU with me because I need you there. I don't know what I'm going to do without you down there. I need that rock. I need that foundation and support. And that's what Nas really needed when he was at LSU. You know, Rudy lived a short distance away, a phone call away, a quick drive away, went to all the road games, you know, no matter where it was in the SEC. And then, once Nas signed with the Wolves about a year later, he drives up, sets up shop in Minnesota, and, you know, drives to and from Iowa for Nas's G League games, always there, always, you know, in the stands, always there for support afterwards, you know, hanging out with him, rode out COVID with him in 2020, the whole thing. Like, that's how tight they stayed over the years.
And you look and say, you know, Nas Reed, like many young professional athletes, where you come from relatively nothing into incredible wealth, there are challenges that most of us could never relate to, right? You're instantly famous. You're incredibly wealthy. But did he talk about how Rudy kept him, like, sort of focused and on the track? Because you could see where we've seen it with plenty of other young players where they end up kind of with the hangers-on and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that was, you know, I think a big part of his high school years, you know, the guy, Ed Bright, who ran Nas's AAU program, said Rudy was, you know, I have that in the story, I think, was very much his protector from those outside influences. And, you know, always making sure that the shady kind of people stayed away or stayed at arm's length from Nas. And even at LSU, whether it be, you know, making sure Nas wasn't, you know, partying too much or what have you. Like, Rudy was there to keep him focused, keep his mind on their ultimate goal, which was to make it in the NBA eventually. So Nas is always, I think if you get to know Nas a little bit, he's always been like that. Like, he's always been focused. He's always been driven. And you know, that definitely sticks out when you get to know him. But I think he just really appreciated just having somebody in his ear constantly reminding him that this is what you need to be doing. This is what you have to do. Do not go to this party, you know, instead, you know, study for your exam or whatever, get to sleep early, you know, because you have an early morning workout, stuff like that. Just having that constant reminder in his ear was what Nas really needed.
Chris Hine is with the Star Tribune. He's covered the Timberwolves for years. And those relationships and that depth of reporting gets you the ability to do an incredible story like this. I don't want to give away the whole thing because I want people to read it. But you know, Rudy gets diagnosed with leukemia, ends up right before game six of the Wolves, Memphis, 2022 series. Nas is out for personal reasons. And it's because Rudy was gone. That he had died from leukemia after fighting that. Tell us where today Nas is, because we look at Nas, he's a incredibly strong candidate for Sixth Man of the Year. He is a phenomenon. He's a social media meme. How Sheila Rountree gets to experience it. Did Rudy get any taste of that before he got sick?
Yeah, I think he saw some of the growing of the meme, that Nas Reed becoming a meme in and of itself, like all that, and just sort of the early attachment that the fan base had for Nas from the time he really started playing that first and second season. But I think over the last, especially two seasons, as Nas has just grown and grown as a player, it's really gone to another level, especially this season. So it all kind of culminated with, you know, and I ended the article basically with what was going through Nas and Sheila's head as they were watching Nas Reed towel night happen. You know, and late in the fourth quarter of that game when he hit a three and everybody opened up their towels and like, you know, that was, I think it was a significant moment for them, but I don't think, you know, people in the arena really realized what was going through his head at the time and what was going through Sheila's head at the time, because they both thought of Rudy and what he really would have liked to see in that moment. They both kind of wish he was there to really see that.
Everybody should read it. Chris Hines' story on Nas Reed with beautiful photos from Jeff Wheeler and Carlos Gonzalez, wonderful photojournalists. Chris, tremendous work. Thanks for sharing some insight with us today.
Appreciate you. Thanks for having me on and for sharing the story. Really appreciate it.
All right. Let's get him Sixth Man, and let's go Wolves as they start the playoffs on Saturday. Windy in Woodbury. It is 54. Lots of good stuff on the podcast. We'd love if you'd subscribe. Drive Time with DeRussia. Great science journalist. Maggie Kurth joined us at 4 o'clock. Go back and listen to that where you get podcasts, plus some fun on Nerf Wars. I got called a helicopter parent today, so check that out in our 4 o'clock hour as well. Henry Lake's coming up.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.